It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So we're going now, huh? We're on.
It's rolling.
It's rolling.
If the new equipment's working, we're rolling.
Man, you got headphones on. I feel like a couple of pilots.
I think you made that crack
Bombardier.
Last time.
No, I didn't. I didn't make the pilot crack. Today, I feel like a pilot. It's like, all right, is the runway clear?
You know what? I need a windscreen, and I need lots of other stuff to play pilot, which I have here, but let's not do it. So where you been? My goodness. It's been.
I've been stuck in a whole bunch of different creative meetings. I went to the Grammys.
You went to the Grammys.
I figured I'd get that look from you.
You went to the Grammys. Is there...
Yeah, we actually had a blast. We went to the Grammys.
Did you wear your tux and all?
I did.
Wow.
And,
did it fit?
It did. My wife looked pretty hot. She was awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was pretty proud. I think I was just stationary stuff.
Just okay.
Helped her walk in the high heels. It was all good.
You helped her walk in the high heels. You kept her.
I had great respect for women that could walk downhill like that. We don't know.
Downhill in heels? Doesn't that make you level? No, I guess it would make
no,
you
level. No, I tell you, I was like, wow, I could not do that. I was very thankful I was just a guy in normal shoes.
So why were you at the Grammys?
We just got invited and taken to the Grammys.
Oh.
It was fun. I'd never been before. It was a blast.
No, I've never been. Let me think. Do you have a desire to go?
No, I didn't call you. I didn't say, hey, Wayne.
I was up in Washington anyway, in Chewila, Washington.
That sounds Indian.
Probably is. Big casino there. Might be your first clue.
There you go.
But, yeah.
Well, I had a blast. You know what was pretty amazing is they were actually – I don't know what the telecast was, but the time there was pretty spiritual.
Yeah?
Yeah. There was a bunch of folks that obviously very clearly loved Jesus. Then there was one lady at the end that did some weird Catholic exorcism as a – it got really weird. But you know what was the kind of cool thing? I have no idea what the telecast is like, but the entire audience was like, what is she doing? Just seems so just out of place. And it was kind of fun to go, nobody's responding to this.
Wow.
But it was weird.
So Lady Gaga, those people are really into Jesus stuff deeply, is that what you're saying?
No. Okay. But some of the people there were, and it was just cool to see.
Oh, okay.
It's a different space.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
It's fun? Cool. Well, I had a good time up in Washington and met with a lot of different people, as they say, from all across the spiritual spectrum. Heard a term I'd never heard before, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, a new term.
Maybe you've heard it. Maybe it's in your tradition of things, but I was being asked questions about pinnacle leadership.
No, that the best I got there is a golf ball.
Yeah, it's pretty clear what it means, right? Pinnacle leadership.
Somebody's
at the top of a pyramid, absolutely.
It's at the top.
And that's
the pinnacle.
That's the way it needs to be done, especially if someone has a gift to be in pinnacle leadership. That was pretty weird.
And they invited you?
Well, no. There was some discussion of that. The people that invited me, obviously.
I was going to say, that's not the pinnacle approach.
Obviously. It's a group. The people that invited me, even though I met with lots of other folks, but the people that invited me were kind of recently dislocated from a group that they had, some of them had been on staff at, and others had been participants in various ways. And now they're trying to figure out what else to do. And, you know, so they kind of start a weekly meeting, and now there's some, you know, how much are we going to move to be what we were? How much is it just, it's a good ship, just the wrong captain, so we'll get the same ship put on different captains, and it'll be good for us. And
yeah, I'm not thinking that's the deal. I thought that, though.
You thought that for a while?
Yeah. I remember when I first sat down, it was sort of like, you know what, we got to get the guys with the white hats driving the boat. That's what I thought.
Yeah, but then it turns out the boat's more like a ring. So even if you have a white hat on when you turn captain, somehow the ring twists you up a bit. And that's why I have this discussion over and over again with people. Is it basically a good system that the wrong people get in and control? Or is basically the act of control what twists relatively good people into a disfigurement of who they really are? And I'm kind of on that page. I'm on the page of saying the system's not evil, but taking power over people does twist something up in our soul, which I think is why Jesus said, don't do this like the leadership of the Gentiles do this. Don't lord over others, because it's just going to whack you eventually. So that was of interest. We had some good talking about that. Not sure we're all seeing eye to eye, but I'm leaving town, so it's okay.
Hi-ho, silver, and away.
And then I met with a very interesting guy that wants to turn the Jake book, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, into a movie. So
that's sweet.
Yeah, quite a spiritual journey of his own. And so, I mean, we're just kind of knocking on the door and see what can be done and what his vision of it is. Interestingly enough, he's at Sundance Film Festival a couple weeks ago, and he sits down next to a gal at this dinner somewhere. Actually, his wife was sitting next to her, and she leaned over at one point and said, I think we need to switch places. You need to talk to this woman. And so they switched places, and this gal was in the middle of reading So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And she'd just gotten her doctorate in screenwriting or something. And so they got talking about this book. And so it's kind of interesting. I don't know.
They were both reading it?
Well, the one guy wants to make the movie.
Right.
Yeah. But the other gal, he had never met before. She's in the middle of reading the book and was talking about writing a script or something. So it was just kind of that synergistic, wow, could this be a little thing more than a coincidence? And so I don't know where it's going to go yet. We're just still doing some chatting and seeing.
That's fun.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool, though.
It is.
I liked some vision for turning that into a movie and seeing if that Jake John conversation can go on and resonate with a different audience. So could be cool.
I think the title gets people.
Yeah, so you get a chance to listen to the four guys we had last week?
I got a chance to listen to some of it, but I get a chance to listen to all of it.
You're not a faithful God Journey podcast listener?
I don't tend to listen to myself. Sorry.
I don't either.
I hear it's good, though.
It was wonderful.
I hear it's good. I saw a bunch of the comments. Seemed like a whole bunch of people lit up and enjoyed the comments.
Yeah, I think you got to enjoy people on a journey who finding life and freedom from just the normal way of doing stuff that seems contrived and full of obligation and all that to living in some kind of freedom. And I mean, we had the three guys were here for the weekend, and we just had a lot of fun playing golf and fellowshipping with each other, watched the movie Instinct, which was fun, and then played some bocce ball. It's a big time bocce ball, so.
Ooh.
Yeah, we had a good time.
That's like Italian bowling, isn't it? Something like that?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. But I don't know if the Italians play it. It sounds
Italian.
Bocce ball.
Bocce?
It might.
I don't know. I've never bocced.
It could be derived from the Aramaic. I have no idea.
Oh.
But we had fun, so.
Jesus bowling.
I like weekends like that, just hanging out, being brothers, talking about your journeys. And, I mean, we kept getting into these wonderful discussions about God and Jesus and what he's doing in our lives. And I kept looking up going, I wish I was taping this one too. That was just really, really good stuff. But,
well, I think when it flows out of the naturalness of just conversation and what people are doing, those are the life-giving exchanges.
They are. Literally, so. You just got enough relaxed time just to hang out and enjoy each other. You're not trying to focus in on a conversation, trying to, you know, it's just you got lots of leisurely time, and the things that spill out of that are usually pretty wonderful.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
So where we got, you got a bunch of mail there.
I have no idea where we're going today, which is not uncommon. We normally have that. We're just usually a little more together than today, probably. We got this on the blog in our Sense of Belonging podcast, and I thought maybe it'd probably be good to ferret it out a little bit. Said, Wayne and Brad, may I ask a question? I love your podcast. They are a comfort. I feel this incredible tiredness, though, when I hear the phrase, without pain, there would be no growth. I hear this so often among Christians who live around me. When I first saw this, I'm thinking, where did we say that? It doesn't sound like you. It doesn't sound like me. And then she said, no, I didn't hear on the podcast. She was just trying to raise the issue. I hear so often from Christians who live around me, it fills my heart with discontent. I'm not sure exactly why. I guess it's because I'm in a season of Jesus filling me with his love and trying to convince me not to expect the other shoe to drop at any moment. I've gone through some situations that are very painful, and it doesn't help to hear, without pain, there is no growth. After the pain is gone, yes, I can see the victory Jesus has won over yet another bad space in my life, and am so in love with him for again rescuing me out of the mud. for not letting the bad win, but I have a hard time thinking he intended to teach me this way and that he isn't filling me with himself even in the good days. So when I hear people around me talking this way, it's almost like the Christian community is trying to own pain and suffering. There's too much suffering outside the church. Can't we grow without pain? Am I ridiculous to think this way? Is it possible to view Jesus growing us in a way that he's so big, so powerful, that he won't allow pain to win? Instead of he wants us to have pain to grow.
That's loaded.
Boy.
You know what?
I'm with her on that last phrase, though. Is it not he just wants us to win over pain, not I'm giving you pain to grow? I'm on that page completely.
Yeah, I think it's a bummer when people hunker down into the place of, well, you know, everything that's suffering, that's God teaching me something, as if he has no other means by which to educate us.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, I don't think that's the case. And I got a really cool scripture verse that I think escapes most people's, you know, focus. It's out of 2 Peter 2, and it talks about, you know, like we like newborn babes long for the pure milk of the word that by it you may grow in respect to salvation. And here's the really crazy phrase. If you have tasted the kindness of the Lord. It's talking about growing in salvation. And it says, if you have tasted the kindness. And I sort of go like, you know what? If you don't know anything of the kindness of God, you are not going to hang out in relationship. You're not really going to grow. I think you have to be able to taste something of God's love before this thing really clicks. And the good news of pain is that you can learn from it and grow from it. But it is certainly not the only tool that God has by which to shape and direct our lives. I sort of feel like, you know, when you're about to touch a hot stove, I love that there is the reflex of pain, like, oh, don't. But if your body has an instinct to avoid it, and that's protection for your health, I'm pretty sure it's not a correct conclusion to think that God, well, that's how he grows us.
Yeah, I've never lined up in that line when God says, I have some pain to dish out. Who wants it to grow more?
You never raise your hand?
I never get in that line.
Me, pick me.
No, I think what's wonderful about this journey, because, you know, people in some kind of religious contracts had some of these discussions in Spokane last week, but the idea is that the world is really pretty good unless God's disciplining you and then pain comes into your life. So pain's always a sign of God's disfavor or whatever, and then you've got to kind of crawl your way back out of it. The whole idea that, you know, pain is something God adds to life. And I like the idea that, you know, pain is a part of life. It's the brokenness of the world, the twistedness of our own self-preferring natures and the self-preferring natures of people we live near. That life is basically about stuff not working the way it was meant to work because we're just out of sync with the Creator. God comes in that to be the redemptive force. So if I'm in pain, is he going to work that for his good? Yeah. Does he create it so he has something to work with? I just think that's crazy talk. I just don't think he needs to.
I think you end up with an abusive look at God if that's really all that's going on. You get another phrase that, you know, God will take you the easiest way you come. And it's like, is that true? I don't know. I don't know that he's up there trying to drag me someplace.
I've looked through the scriptures. I haven't found that verse. But
it's in the first Rocky Mountain Patrol or something like that.
Yeah, it must be somewhere. You know,
something about the Canadian police.
I certainly don't live that way.
But I think unfortunately those things get ingrained because people don't know what to do with suffering. They try to problem solve it at every juncture as opposed to accepting it as part of, you know, sometimes it rains. Well, why did it rain? Well, it did.
It does once in a while.
and sometimes
the whole idea of water
is really helpful. Other times it's not. And it's a question of like, Lord, what do I do with this? You know, it's like, I do not know how to avoid pain. And it seems like those that try to live that way end up doing a pretty funky chicken for how they walk.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, I don't know how to do that. But I do know that God's wanting us to know his kindness. I mean, David said, taste and see that the Lord is good. I really feel like, you know what? If in the midst of pain you're finding yourself shipwrecked, simply say, God, I don't know how to do this without knowing both sides of that.
Yeah, and I don't like the phrase, without pain there will be no growth. I don't like that. I like the fact that when I'm in pain, that I know God's going to be growing me up in it. I like that there's something useful about this if, in fact, I've got to go through it. But I think some of what that may be trying to address, on the other side, I was talking with someone yesterday. They've got some kind of disease that's progressing, and they're just kind of saying, well, you know, I keep praying to Jesus and hope it's going to go away tomorrow, and, you know, that's what we're believing the best. And, well, they've been believing the best for quite a while, and it's not changing yet. And at some point, I'm all for praying until, like David did when his son was dying, I want to pray till the last second, and then when it's done, it's done. But so I'm all for that. But the idea that I think for many of us, it's hard to embrace the things in our life that God may want to reveal himself through, because we're so trying to get it to change. I mean, our whole focus is, it's got to change, it's got to change, it's got to change. And sometimes the things that come our way, sometimes God does marvelous healings and heals it, takes away. Other times people walk through some very dark places. And I want to know that in the dark places, he's there, not in the dark places. Well, that proves I'm not on his good side, or he doesn't like me. One of the things that Kevin said last week on the podcast from DC was that the default position for him switched from God is against me unless I curry his favor to God is for me. And then no matter what I'm in, he's for me. He's not on the side of this that's against me and hurting me. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to fix it the way I want it. It means I get to walk with him in the darkest place of my life and where I hurt and where things don't turn around the way I hope so. So I hope there's more prayer than just, God, fix it or I'm lost. It's fix it, please. If not, be with me in it. How are you showing yourself to me? And how do we walk through this together? And that becomes a very different focus.
See, I think that's what's revealed in the life of Jesus, is the fact that God did not exempt himself from pain, but he crawled into the midst of it that we would not be alone.
Yep.
And you know, I think there's probably the worst condition is when you feel abandoned in your pain. So if the presence of pain means the absence of God, that's a really yucky equation, because I don't know how you're going to avoid pain in this world. But I don't think God – I think he's promised never to leave us. So it's like, well, no, I don't think that equation's true. He's there in the midst. Then the question is, Lord, what's going on here? Is there something I can do? There are some things you cannot do anything about. Yeah. I'd love to think we were in so control that I could just, well, you know what? I got to find the right knob and twist it, and then it'll go away. It's like, well, I haven't found all the knobs.
Yeah, if they're there, I don't know.
But I do think that God is looking for us to kind of dialogue through and just like, what are you doing here? I think to just principle it is where you end up with the conclusions that, well, you know, without any pain, you know, there's no gain. It's like, I think those are just principles. I don't think that's the fruit of a dialogue.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, if it came up in the whole sense of belonging conversation, then part of it is an attempt to validate myself in my suffering. Well, God's doing this to me so I will grow better, which is a real twist on a real deal, because I just don't think that's what the heart of a father is. The heart of a father is not going to create suffering for his kids. But a Harvard father is going to go with his kids through the suffering and make whatever good we can out of it. So I think that's part of maybe what's at stake here, is that I want to feel validated, know my life sucks, everything I do turns horrible, and that's just proving that God really is blessing me in a way to shape me to be more like him. And going, okay, now that's a little twisted.
I think that the sad reality is that ends up kind of molding you into what may well be an enemy of a situation. I mean, I don't think God puts diseases on his children so as to teach them.
Yeah.
But I do think his children experience diseases. And can they grow? Can they learn? Yes.
Yeah.
But does that mean that God's the author of that? I have a hard time with that conclusion.
Yeah. Or even that every suffering is necessarily a learning experience, whether he caused it or not. I just walk through stuff with him. Sometimes you learn a lot through things like that, and sometimes you don't learn much at all. But the important thing is being with him kind of going through it. And maybe what suffering does for me, I think when I have said this pretty often, I think the deepest lessons I've learned have come at the hands of pain, often caused by someone else. But it has been at those brutal moments. And part of that is not, well, I really needed that to learn this lesson, but that somehow in the pain, you kind of come to the end of yourself and thinking that you can provide for yourself and thinking that you're big enough, good enough to make life what you want it to be if you just try hard enough, particularly someone like me who's a pretty hard trier and a pretty capable at accomplishing a certain level of things without him. It really is a great reminder to say, man, I am not in control of this. I'm not in control of my life. I want to be walking with him through whatever keeps unpacking in my life and experience.
So does everything that happens happen for a reason?
Yeah, you know, there are people that say so. I don't think I'm in that camp anymore. I think things just happen because this world's pretty broken. How we respond to it, how we walk, that's where I'm at. I don't know where you are in that.
Well, I guess I cringe when I hear that, you know, everything just happens for a reason, because I end up going like, well, ultimately, if you follow that, that places everything back in God's lap as the author and the genesis of all of that. And then there's a whole bunch of yucky things I don't know how to reconcile. And I think one of the things that when you're trying to learn all your lessons, well, if it all happens for a reason, then yeah, you're being taught something. Somewhere in the universe, you drew this thing to you because you needed the lesson. And I'm just going like, man, that gets to be some real funky stuff where I just go like, I don't think everything that happens happens for – I think there are multiple wills in this universe that exert themselves. Some do it in participation and in harmony with what God might want. And there's many that don't. And they affect me.
And somewhat hostile to what God wants.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, well, gosh, given that equation, I don't think everything that does happen happens for a reason. It may have been caused by somebody. So if that's what we mean by that, sure, I can buy into causality.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of truth to that T-shirt that, you know, isn't the appropriate way to say it, but stuff happens.
Yeah.
And I think that when you try to ordain everything and you try to find purpose in everything, I think you're going more on principle than you are on dialogue.
Yeah, and you're somehow hoping that if it's happening to me for a reason, like when people have young children die, and there's always that struggle in the funeral of there's got to be a bigger takeaway than my child, like 15 people got saved at the funeral service. That's why God took my child home. There's some need to validate my pain with some kind of silly thing like that, which to think that God would – you know, take someone out because that's the only way he could make himself known to a group of 15 people or 500 is just bizarre. And I've heard that story. I've read the manuscripts. I mean, you have too. We've had people send us that story. And there's just kind of a yuck factor of, I'm grateful that God used the death of your kid to draw people to himself. I think that's
marvelous.
But to think of that as, then that validates the son's dying or the daughter's dying, that was now it's worth it to God and somehow worth it to me that God would do that. I think that's just not coming out of a healthy relationship with God. It is, as you're saying, more I'm trying to find a principle to rest in here.
I think it's that it for some people this would be hard to hear, but I think it is that warped sense of comfort. If I can come up with a godly purpose, then somehow I can feel okay about what happened. And it's like, I just soon hurt and go like, wow, ouch. I don't know why everything happens. And I've stopped feeling the need to explain it for people in pain. I've just sat there, come alongside and just go like, ouch. And just love on them. And it's like, in the midst of that, I think there's more reality in a world that kind of says, you know what, Jesus did say, in this world you will have trouble. And then what he said, but be of good cheer because I've overcome all that. He didn't say, in this world you will have trouble and realize all this trouble is me teaching you.
Yeah.
Or all this trouble happens for a reason. He could have said that, but he didn't.
Right.
He did say, but be of good cheer because I have overcome. I look at some of this stuff and you go like, man, I do not know what to do with certain situations. I don't understand why they're so hard. I don't know what to do. And it's like, ouch, Lord, help. Not how can I divine? What principles can I apply? What lessons can I extract? You know, don't waste your sorrows. It's like, I get all that. But if I can't understand some of that out of dialogue, I'm pretty sure I can apply just about a principle to anything. And that doesn't give me, that doesn't necessarily lead me to a truth-filled conclusion.
Yeah, especially if you're drawing the wrong principle into a situation. Then you know, if the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? If you've tried to justify something just so I'll feel better, so I've got some principle that I'm applying. And I think there is for people, I like what Carrie wrote here, because it's, there's a yuck factor in without pain, there is no gain. There should be a yuck factor there, because there's something about it that doesn't make sense. And I think we do hear people talk about, well, God took my child to save 200 kids. I'm going, you know, I'm thinking that's got a yuck factor all its own too. It's just, no, that's not right. That's not coming out of a place in him that says, yeah, tragedy happens and God inhabits our tragedies and we can walk through them with him. And if God redeems the pain in my life to accomplish wonderful things in the lives of people, even Paul's talking that way in 2 Corinthians about, you know, my comfort will bear witness in your comfort later on. And that, you know, we despaired even of death and driven to the brink of ourselves. And now we've got comfort to pass on to other people. So I think walking with God through painful stuff will lead to some wonderful transformation in you. But I wouldn't agree that that's the best way he works or the only way he works. He teaches great things just in times of joy and rest and relaxation. And a weekend with four guys last weekend, it was just fun and full of joy and the celebration of a relationship. There's lots I learned in that too. So,
well, if you can't find God in both, then the truth is you're not going to end up with a full picture of who he is.
Yeah. And you've got to ask if I'm finding him at all. If he's not as real in the pain as he is in the times of joy, or even in the times of just life, just not necessarily a big high, not necessarily a big low, it's just life.
And he's there in the normal too.
He is, and I have that pain in my heart. I think maybe this no pain no gain goes back to, you know, weightlifters and football players, and you know, when you're actually doing a discipline of some kind, and you know, Paul does talk about buffeting his body or buffeting his body or whatever.
Buffeting.
Let's go eat. But there is a place where God's discipline is challenging us to grow in an area. And if that's where the no pain, no gain thing is, I'm learning to trust him to my extremity. I don't mind that point of view at all. But if it's this waiting for the other shoe to drop and I'm not really growing now, so obviously something really bad is about to happen to me so I can grow more, that just misses who God is to a very high degree. But then when you're in it, I love the, you mentioned Peter a little bit, First Peter, you know, end of 2, first part of 3, particularly in the Message, one of the things Eugene Peterson says is, Jesus will get the last word on everything, which is talking about, you know, being high and lift up, all enemies subdued under his feet. And he translates that, God will get the last word on everything. And I love that. Whenever I hear that phrase, I think of my dad growing up in the vineyard, and no matter who went to his vineyard, no matter if it was, you know, people picking grapes, people pulling up the raisins, people pruning, tying the vines, whatever. My dad walked every row of his vineyard after whatever worker had been through just to make sure it was the way it needed to be. So if they missed grapes, he picked them and put them on the tray. If they didn't quite prune the vine right, he would reprune it. Or if it wasn't tied right, he'd tie it right. He had the last word about everything on his vineyard. And I love the fact, I've got lots of situations in my life that I would truly say Jesus has not had the last word on yet. They're a bit of a mess. And they're broken, and I feel abused and misused and exploited by other people. Certainly. Has he had the last word on him yet? Not yet. Is he going to? He's going to. Somehow, at the end of the age, by the end of the age, in the age to come, Jesus is going to get the last word on everything. To which then Peter goes on to say, so then don't think of your, so think of your sufferings as a weaning from the old sinful habit of always having to have your own way. That's the first part of chapter 3. Jesus went through everything you're going through and more. I find great comfort in that reality. And then so think of when you are suffering, think of it as a weaning from the old sinful habit of always having to have your own way. Then you can wake up every morning, I love this, free to do what God wants instead of being tyrannized by what you want. I just think it's a lovely way to say what suffering can do in our lives, but I don't think it says, hey, wake up in the morning, volunteer for as much pain as you can, or God forbid, create as much pain as you can for the Christians around you because you're just going to help them grow up. I just think that's crazy talk.
Yeah, I think in all of this, when God can come alongside and help displace your self-absorption or your just selfishness, I mean, I do think that suffering does a good job on that because it's hard to really process through something difficult with your selfishness intact.
Yep.
And so you can praise him for that.
Yeah.
You can thank him for that. And I do think that a lot of times, you know, I heard this phrase, your anger shows who you serve. That can be an ouchie. Because most of the time, I'm not really miffed at the injustice on behalf of all this stuff outside. Most of the time, I'm miffed because it's not going the way I want it.
Yeah.
And I think when God allows that to kind of say, can there be great instruction there? Yeah. Can there be great growth there? Absolutely. Is that why it's happening? No, I may well be the author of a fair amount of that. That may not be initiated by God, but can he crawl in that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, you know, no pain, no gain, or no growth without pain. I sort of like, no growth without new perspective. That one I could track with.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times it's like, Lord, help me see this the way you do. Because so oftentimes our pain basically causes us to sort of knee-jerk response as if somehow, oh, something's wrong. I must have done something wrong, or God must not be blessing me. Or you end up with this knee-jerk performance reaction, as opposed to saying, "Hey, God, help me see what's going on here." And I think that's probably a more apropos question to say, "Help me see what's going on here," because then I think you'll know how to respond.
Yeah, and I think knowing how to respond is really key to getting some value out of suffering. I also think it's key to limiting what the suffering is going to do to me. Because if I'm in a desperate situation, I feel like God's a million miles away and I'm groping for my own salvation, save your life, lose it, you save it. I think we make a real mess out of our lives. I think suffering with this growing engagement with Jesus in the midst of it is what shows me how to respond, how to, you know, and sometimes that helps. If it doesn't fix the circumstance, it's at least sets my heart at ease in it. So I'm not having the added anxiety, which a lot of people have. It's not only that I'm suffering, but then somehow God is allowing the suffering. And then somehow, and just spirals into, what does he have against me? And it takes you in a place where, no, suffering is not going to help you if it just leaves you lost. But how do I find him? How do I walk with him? How do other brothers and sisters sit down with me? And I like what you said earlier about just learning to sit down and say, ouch, with somebody. We get the, you know, rejoice with those who rejoice scripture. We really don't get the weep with those who weep scripture. I think most times when I'm around people that are hurting, people are trying to slap advice on them to kind of get them to stop hurting, just to kind of,
yeah,
you know, put, and everything plastic you say, any advice you give to someone that's in a pit of pain usually is not helpful. It's usually producing the very opposite of what you would expect it to produce. What people need to know when they're hurting is that they're still loved. God's as real in this brokenness, even if you caused it, than he is in any other season in your life. That's where God wants to meet us. That's where God wants to walk us through. And I think advice at that time is trying to prop people up. Well, you know, it's always somebody's in a better place. Or I think those things are actually backfire and actually distance people from God. And I think an empathetic ear, just someone that crawls in the pit with you and just says, man, this is brutal. I'm sorry. And weep with those who weep and love those who are in pain. I think that holds a lot more value than the other.
Yeah, and I think sometimes our incessant need to talk about stuff actually isn't always helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, I noticed something in my son Jonathan. He was going through a rough go, and it's like everyone was trying to reach out to him because he can be a little bit of a cave dweller, and it was sort of like trying to get him to talk about it. And I was trying to go like, why is this sort of getting a rise in him? Why is he getting a little angry? Or just, you know, it's like, you know, he's hurting. And it's not as if he can't acknowledge it, but he's not really wanting to talk about it. And why do we think that talking about it is the best way to solve it? And I finally realized, you know what? He just needs to be understood and needs to be given some space. And he'll sort it out. He's trying to endure it right now. Talking about it is making it worse.
Yeah, but it might make me feel better if he talks about it. Isn't that what it comes
from? I wouldn't mind doing. It's kind of like, golly.
It's not about you.
Hello.
It's not about you. Let people come out when they're ready to. Yeah.
And I don't know. That was a real eureka. And I all of a sudden recognized when I sort of kind of defended his need to just be himself, it's almost as if he felt more safe and therefore was a little more able to come out. He didn't have to sort of be his own bodyguard. And I just realized, you know, a lot of times when people are going through stuff, we might think it's healthy for them to talk about it. And at some point, it probably is, because you can stuff it and get lost in it. But sometimes people are just gritting their teeth and trying to go through it. And the easiest way through it is to just keep walking.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think that needs to be part of the equation as well.
It does. And then there's a chance that we'll find God in the midst of the things we're in and find ways out of it and find ways through it that are healthy and wonderful. But if you don't know that God's in the mix with you, then that's not helpful. If you're thinking God's doing the mixing, you know, I had that fight this weekend with some people about how aggressive is God allowing? Like, nothing gets into my life that God does not allow, which in some way always ends up blaming God for what it is. Because, you know, God let my best friend do this with me. God, you know, didn't stop the car accident or didn't curtail the cancer the way I hoped or prayed. And then it makes us just... Those things distance us from the very God we need when we're hurting.
Well, I mean, do you think we have a blanket promise of protection?
I'm not sure how you mean that.
I think a lot of people have an unclarified assumption that if I'm his kid, he's supposed to protect me, and he will keep my life largely pain-free. Therefore, when pain shows up or adversity shows up, we do go, this is strange. I mean, James says, don't consider it a strange thing. And the first thing we do, you know, this is strange. It's like, well, no. But I think we live with that bias that it's like somehow I'm entitled to this sense of protection and that God should be focused on my pleasure.
And then if that breaks down, where's God? Now he's your enemy.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, now he's against me.
I must have been done something wrong, and so you're 1 foot into condemnation, and I just end up going like, I think the assumption there, I mean, Jesus said, in this life you'll have trouble. So I don't end up concluding, oh, pain-free existence.
Right. I go like, I don't either.
No, yeah. pretty sure I get, you know, sweet and sour.
Yeah, circumstantially, yeah. I think the protection I do believe in is there's nothing that can happen to me in this world that God won't be with me in and walk me through and will protect me. That doesn't mean protect me from anything happening that's bad. Protect me in everything I'm going through. There's a way he wants to be with me, to walk me through it, to bring me to greater health and wholeness. I do believe in that kind of protection.
Yeah.
But not the external, I'm going to keep every bad thing at bay. So if something gets through, obviously I was sleeping or you deserved a good whooping and here's your whooping. And I don't find either of those worthy of the God I'm growing to know.
No, you get the Bible verse, no weapon forged against you will prosper, but it doesn't say it won't hit you.
Yeah.
It just says, and I think that's where I get my sense of comfort, because I think some people go like, well, what do you mean? Is, you know, I don't have any protection? And then it's like walking in fear. It's like, no, I don't think I have to walk in fear. I think I can walk in relationship knowing that God is with me, is for me. I can pray. I think to be honest, I don't know we avail ourselves of the things that are there. And I think there is some measure of going like, hey guys, this thing is not on autopilot. I do think we're meant to ask that we would receive. I do think we're meant to seek so that we can find. I don't think, hey, it just happens.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people tend to be on the pendulum swing of one of the extremes where it's like, you know, it's all up to me. It's like, well, I don't think it is. It's God who is at work in me, both to will and to do. But I'm involved.
Yeah.
And I think it's got to be that sense of the partnership of, Lord, help me walk within the protection of your word. I don't want to step outside the bounds of what you've invited us to. If I do, guess what? I think I'm going to expect some consequences of violating that. And I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Would I learn from that? Yeah, but did he author that? No.
Yeah.
I did that.
Yeah, and I like Paul's language in 2 Corinthians where he keeps going to things. We were perplexed but not in despair. We were beat down but not shaken. He talks about these horrible things they went through. But the inner life, that outward man wasting away, the inner man being renewed day by day, that's, I think that's the place to live in the place of our sufferings and pain. Even if I help caused it by things I did, that could be true. It could also be true that, you know what, I'm just a victim of sorts of what other people are up to in the world, or just what the world is, or sickness, or whatever. But to go through something and not be devastated by it, not lose sight of God in it, not, to me, that's what Paul's talking about in 2 Corinthians. Even when he's talking about going through some of the greatest pain of his life, I'm pressed down, but we're not forsaken, you know, perplexed. Well, I don't know what's going on here, but not in despair, because this inner man, this life of God, continues to shine brighter than whatever it is that we happen to be enduring at the moment. And I think I've had lots of moments in my past where every suffering in my life was a reason for me to challenge God. What's wrong with you? After all I've done for you, how do you let this thing in? I've spent years of my life being a world-class whiner about this suffering proves you're not being faithful. I'm much more Job there. This is your fault than I ever was. I know I deserve this somehow for all the horrible things I've done. I didn't spend much time in that course. I spent my time in the other was like, get in the dock, man. I'm going to line you up with some questions. I'm going to show you how unfair you're being to me. And I'm telling you what, pain is an incredibly scary thing if it proves God's against you, that your father's not your father, that he's doing stuff just because he's a bit of a sadist in the universe. And finding freedom from that, you know, 17, 18 years ago, this beginning journey of learning to live loved, and then still bad things happen. Worse things have happened to me in the last 15 years that happened in the first 40 some odd. But you know what? I've not ever lost sight of him in it. And that's made all the difference. It's been, I've got you here. No, I don't like this circumstance. No, I don't like what's going on. But I do have you. And I want you to have your way in me through this. And if I can be redemptive in it, great. If it's just a matter of perseverance, persevere. But that to me is what's become real. So I don't waste all that time anymore when bad things set in with this, 2 or 3 weeks, months maybe, of just blaming God and fussing at God. And why could you do this? And why would you let this? And why aren't you fixing it? And all my little tools to try and manipulate God to get what I want. And man, that's 40 years before I realized how worthless that was. You look back and go, wow, I was pretty thick. 40, it never helped. It didn't endear God to change anything when I was screaming and yelling at him. And it didn't help me because it just spiraled me deeper into whatever. Now, not going down that road, no matter what happens in life, you're safe in the reality that he's here, he's with me, and he's going to get the last word on everything eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the life of Paul when he's saying, you know, I want to know you, the power of your resurrection. And he tosses in, and the fellowship of your sufferings. What do you think that's about?
I know what I don't know theologically what it's about. I would just say for me personally, I love the fact that there's a sweetness of fellowship that comes in the depth of pain that doesn't come just in the times of victory and joy and whatever. And whatever does that mean? He shares ours. I think it means that. Does it also mean we share in his, the hurt he has for the world, the doing things, you know, treat the slave, treat the servant the same way you treat the master? I think it's part of that too.
I mean, I look at the power of the resurrection. It's like, well, guess what? You're not going to know that unless some things die. You're not.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to involve that. The fellowship of sufferings, again, you know, it says in the Greek. I don't know. I don't know what it means in the Greek. I probably did a while back, but I do know this. There can be fellowship there. And it's something that Jesus, it says he was a man acquainted with sorrow. And if he's the sinless Son of God, then not all sorrow is because of my doing.
And, yeah.
You know,
and not all suffering is.
Yeah. So what I come out of that is, you know what? The way that I'm going to know him is in the midst of death, there still can be hope. And the midst of pain, I'm not alone. That's kind of what I take out of that longing is Paul's saying, I want to know you. And in the extremities and the hard places of life, I want to know you. And I want to know that there's still hope there. And I don't see that as faith confessing its muscle, that it's built up. It's more like, I want to know you there, God, where you are the God of the resurrection. You are the one who can overcome.
And the record is from saints before, brothers and sisters I know, who've been in the darkest places of pain and anguish. The resounding testimony is he is there. Yeah. He is always there.
Yeah.
On the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.